Next case for argument, United States v. Ross. Mr. Stewart.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Mark Stewart on behalf of defendant Mr. Ross. With the Court's indulgence, I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. We're here following Mr. Ross's conditional guilty plea to a felon in possession charge. In connection with that plea, he reserved the right to ask this Court to review on appeal several issues. The first, the District Court's denial of his motion to suppress. The second, denial of a motion to dismiss, actually two motions to dismiss. The first, a written one. The second, an oral one made at the guilty plea. And then finally, to submit to this Court that the District Court's sentencing of Mr. Ross as an armed career criminal was inappropriate. He was sentenced to 180 months, that being the mandatory minimum for a felon in possession, based on the District Court's finding concerning his criminal history and so forth. First, as to the motion to suppress, we respectfully submit that the police, when they responded to a report of shots fired in the vicinity of a neighborhood in the Central District of Illinois.
Well, it was lawful for the police to knock on his door, wasn't it?
It was, Your Honor.
Well, when he opens the door, and they know he has a gun, don't they have to enter right then and there?
I apologize, I didn't hear the last part of your question. Well,
They open the door. He opens the door. They try to. He tries to shut it in their face. And so they enter and arrest him. Well, what choice did they have given the fact that he had a gun? Wouldn't it be extremely dangerous for them to say, oh, very sorry to disturb you, and then they leave and they go and get a warrant and so on? Meanwhile, he's got his gun. He's very angry. He may run off with the gun. They go shooting in the air some more. So why weren't they acting, reasonably?
I respectfully submit that in a situation like that, which is...
Well, what should the police have done?
They should not have engaged in the dialogue.
Well, not what they should. Look, they knock on the door, he opens the door, they try to push him out. Now, what should they do? They just leave?
No, sir.
All right, what did they do?
Well, I think we'd be in a different position if they did.
What should they have done? Just answer me. Don't fence with me. What should they have done?
They could well have entered the room or entered the house, as Your Honor posited in your question, as opposed to doing what they did.
They entered the house. I don't understand. That's what they did.
They engaged in a dialogue with him, and now the government submits.
Well, what should they have done? They entered the house, what, they stand there like dummies or what?
No, Your Honor.
Now, what did they do? What are they permitted to do, in your view?
They would have been permitted had exigent circumstances existed.
No.
I thought your position, counsel, was that they should have withdrawn, watched the house, gotten a warrant, and proceeded, because there were no exigent circumstances.
Yes, and that's what I was undertaking to say when I said if there were exigent circumstances, because...
But this is a person who's been shooting this gun in the air. He still has the gun. How many policemen were there?
The record is not entirely clear. At least four, perhaps more than that, surrounding the house. The house was surrounded.
Mr. Stewart, can I ask you about my concern? I'm concerned about the arrest, but I have trouble seeing the link between the arrest and the search warrant. Could you address the government's point about whether the search warrant depended in any way on information obtained during this confrontation that resulted in arrest?
Your Honor, I respectfully submit that of the government's arguments, that is the stronger of the two, and that is... I have no specific argument to make or cases to cite to counter the government's argument that there was probable cause as set forth in the affidavit for the search warrant.
Even without the ID, face-to-face ID?
Yes, Your Honor, yeah. And we acknowledge that that's, our position is that's the stronger argument than the exigent circumstances argument. Mm-hmm. Because if you go down the path of exigent circumstances because there was a firearm present, it swallows up every firearms case. But I acknowledge in response to your question.
We also know that an awful lot of people are entitled to possess firearms. I don't know. Did they know that he was a felon?
My recollection of the record is at the time they went to the house, they did not know that.
Okay. I may be mixing this case up with others. I'm sorry.
Because the government various times posited that they went to the house with probable cause to believe he had either committed a felony state crime of unlawful use of a weapon, mm-hmm. or, as the police said on the threshold, if you don't tell us who you are, we're going to arrest you for obstruction of justice. My point being, no reference. We went because we knew he had a conviction.
Yeah.
As to the motions to dismiss, we respectfully submit that the district court erred in denying both motions. The first was a written motion positing the argument that Mr. Ross's civil rights had been restored, and that it did not have a predicate felony conviction on which to premise the charge.
But going back to Judge Hamilton's question, if you agree that they were entitled to get a search warrant, then what was the harm from this, from the police conduct? Is it that he could have hidden the gun or disassembled it or flushed it down the toilet or something?
No, Your Honor.
So the search warrant would have found the gun, wouldn't it have?
Yes, Your Honor. And that's why...
What was the harm to him?
That's why I responded to the court in the way I did, perhaps not as clear as I would have liked.
I appreciated your candor.
Is that the obtaining of the warrant and the execution of it is a far stronger argument. We respectfully...
No, that's not responsive. I'm asking you, what was the... Given your concession... Well, not... Given that you agree they could have gotten a search warrant lawfully and so on and would have, what's the harm to him from what the police did do?
None, Your Honor.
None?
None.
Okay.
The district court, I'm sorry, the second motion to dismiss was one raised orally by me at his guilty plea, and we acknowledge at the time in front of the district court and acknowledge in our brief and so forth the issue concerning government producing evidence of the defendant's knowledge or involvement in the interstate or foreign commerce component of the felon in possession statute. The district court agreed that based on my words, no one else's, the tortured history of letters by the Illinois Department of Corrections in discharging felons, that two of Mr. Ross's prior felony convictions would not be a basis of predicate crime for the underlying charge. However, his crimes back in the 80s, the district court found, where there was no evidence that he had received a similar restoration of rights letter, could be the basis for the felon in possession charge, and ultimately the court concluded those could also be counted in determining his armed career criminal status. We submit that even though that was the finding of the district court, and I recognize this is going against precedent, but here Mr. Ross received a letter in 1997 that essentially runs afoul of this court's concerns in Buckmeyer and other cases about being mousetrapped. That was his last stint in the state criminal justice system. Convicted back in the 80s of some crimes that do fit within the violent felony definition. But when he was released in 1970, he received a letter that said everything other than having the express prohibition on possessing a firearm. We respectfully submit that that last letter essentially is the essence of what we should be concerned about in terms of mousetrapping. What happened in the 80s, now in the 90s, you get a letter and you're told when arrested you can't possess a firearm. Fairness dictates that in the absence of a defendant knowing that that letter didn't relate back to his prior convictions, he fell into the mousetrap, and the court erred in counting those or permitting them to be used as predicate felonies or in counting the as an armed career criminal statute.
Our case law in this area doesn't require proof of actual reliance, does it?
It does not, Your Honor, or actual receipt. It's simply that it went out. It's, as I respectfully said, but somewhat tongue-in-cheek, it's a tortured history, not because of this court's doing, but because of the records it's had to deal with in the past. My time is up. If I may have just one other moment. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Stewart. Mr. Bone?
Good morning. Jason Baum on behalf of the United States. Judge Hamilton, to answer your question, there was no evidence that the officers knew that Mr. Ross was a felon at the time they got to the residence. That was because it was within 5 minutes of the call of shots fired. They were responding and investigating. We believe that there was it was reasonable to seize the man who had just fired 7 shots in the air in the neighborhood, to seize him inside the threshold of his home, that there was exigent circumstances. And to the court's point,
did one of the officers testify that if nobody had answered the door, they would have just kept watch?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So that doesn't sound very exigent.
I believe the exigency happens when he is the one who answers the door. They see the man matching the description of the shooter is there. They don't know if he is still armed, where the gun is. I think that is what, as Judge Mim said, is the exigency is preventing the further firing of shots. And when you have the man in front of you who fired the shots, I think that's what caused the exigency.
Suppose the shots had been fired the day before. Exigent still?
I think the further in time you get away from the shooting itself, the exigency certainly does disappear, yes, Your Honor. But this was within less than 10 minutes of the call.
The officer said, if you don't identify yourself, we'll arrest you for obstructing law enforcement. Can they do that? Can police come to your home, demand that you identify yourself, and if you don't, if you simply close the door, can they arrest you?
That seems, I would say no, Your Honor.
Thank you. I agree.
That's not what they ended up doing. I don't believe in this case, but no, I don't believe that would be a lawful basis to come to one's house and require an answer that the Fifth Amendment would say you're entitled not to answer at all.
Well, you're not even in custody.
Correct.
No, he was identified by name as a neighbor saying he lived there.
Correct.
He was also described pretty specifically in a leather jacket and glasses and whatever.
Yes.
And he matched that description when he answered the door.
Yes.
Did whatever their inquiry was, it when he they wanted to know for him to say his name, is that when he said you need a warrant and slam the door? Is that?
I believe yes. When they first answered, they said, "Does Earl live here?" I think his first response was, "He's not here now." Then they asked, well, who are you? And he said, that's when you need to come back with a warrant. But since he matched the description of the person, at that point there was already probable cause to arrest him.
It's pretty obvious who he was, at least based on, I guess, their impression.
Yes, Your Honor.
Suppose we were dealing with a fellow who'd been in a bar fight, walked out, goes back to his home. Exigent circumstances? The gun that makes the difference.
I don't believe, if the bar fight didn't involve a gun or a firearm, just fists, I don't believe so, Your Honor.
Knife?
I would say no.
Why not?
I think firearms are a particularly dangerous weapon because they can be fired. The harm can be done further away. I suppose you could throw a knife. I think...
Not many people are good at that.
Correct. But what I'm getting at is with the firearm, I think requiring the police to basically back away in this scenario, I think makes the situation worse, as has been recognized. Bystanders can come, I believe there's probable cause that inside that home is a man who has already shown he's willing, ready, willing, and able to fire a firearm. He could
into
do that
the
from
air, right?
Correct.
Okay. Suppose he just brandished it at the in the domestic dispute.
I think that would be more similar to the Huddleston case.
What I'm trying to understand, in essence, is the scope of the exception you're proposing to Peyton against New York.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
I'm trying to understand the scope of the exception you're proposing for Peyton against New York for arresting somebody without a warrant in their home, without immediate threat to somebody.
There is the Huddleston case, Your Honor, I believe, in this court, where the individual is asleep on the couch.
I don't know if you want to agree with Judge Hamilton that there was no immediate threat.
I think there was an immediate threat in this case, Your Honor. I didn't mean to agree with that.
He's been shooting it illegally, and I don't think the police want to leave him there to shoot out of the window or whatever.
That's what I was trying to say, Your Honor, yes. I believe there was an immediate threat. I believe exigent circumstances supported the arrest, but even if they did not, going and getting the search warrant and finding the gun pursuant to the search warrant, I think there's no taint from this arrest, even if the exigent circumstances didn't exist.
Well, that's the point that your opponent virtually concedes. Yeah.
Yes, sir. If there are no further questions, I would give the bounce.
Okay, thanks very much.
Just one quick question. Yes. Sorry. But
yeah, go ahead.
What is Illinois telling people now when they are being released from prison? We've been struggling with this problem for years under 921. So.
I don't know exactly what the letter says. I believe it's been recrafted yet again. Perhaps the thing to do would be not to tell them anything regarding the rights.
You don't tell them that they've gotten back civil rights, either to sit on a jury or to vote?
I think you can tell them that, but I think you need to specifically then you should address a gun in particular and say you're not entitled to have a gun.
That would do the trick under the statute.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Rautbaum. And Mr. Stuand, I'll give you a minute. Do you want to say something more? I know.
Appreciate the court's indulgence. In response to the court's question about exigent circumstances, the police, law enforcement, cannot create exigent circumstances. When they said, when we knocked on the door, if he had not answered, we would have backed off. Basically, that's what they did. By persistently knocking on the door until he answered the door, they created the exigent circumstances, exacerbated by the further problem as pointed out by the court's question, which is, are you Earl? Is Earl here? He specifically said, it's none of your business. You need a warrant. They persisted and then threatened him with arrest if he doesn't tell them who he is. Or basically, he doesn't tell them who they think he is, which is Earl Ross.
Do you think it was improper for them to knock on the door or just imprudent?
Imprudent.
You think it was illegal?
No, it was not illegal. But having knocked on the door persistently until he answered and then arguing that they now had exigent circumstances, acknowledging the district court that if there had been no response to the door, they would have backed off, is my point.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Stein. You were appointed, were you not? So we thank you for your efforts on behalf.